Welcome to Focused on Life, where we'll be laser focused on all things that have to do with defending human dignity, human rights, and yes, human life at every stage and phase of development. I am your host, Uju.
And I am your other host, Matt.
And we are thrilled to be here today. Hello, Matt.
Hi, Uju. How are you doing today?
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too as well.
Happy new season.
Season two, here we go.
I can't believe this, Matt, but it feels good. It really feels good to be starting season two of Focused on Life podcast.
We've been kind of MIA for a few weeks. Of course, there's the Christmas holidays and then some off. And we're back and we're ready to go with season two. Thank you to everyone who tuned in, who downloaded the episodes from season one. I thought they were pretty good. You know, I was kind of listening to a few of them over the break and I was like, hey, you know what? We're actually pretty okay. We're doing okay, Uju. We're doing okay.
We're doing all right. We're doing our part, Matt. We're doing our part, bringing issues to people's attention, discussing it ourselves, trying to educate ourselves on the issues as well. Because I myself, I don't know about you, Matt, but I find that by the time we treat a topic, okay, yes, some of the topics we already know, we've worked in that area, but it's just good to go through it again, discuss it again, gain extra perspective, you know, kind of bounce it back and forth and be able to share it with listeners. So I find that this podcast is helping me in more ways than one. So we're talking about these issues, we're discussing these issues, but I just simply feel that in so doing, we're getting better at it and we're getting more familiar with the issues and also just coming face to face with the dynamics of the problems, especially when we have guests as well. You know, they bring their own perspective and think perhaps they're bringing it in a way that we've never really thought about before. Like when we talked about the Ohio issues last year, I mean, that for me, that was super, super eye-opening. And when we had I think it was Stefano from the United Nations. So it's always like one extra perspective. So I'm so grateful that I'm able to do this.
Definitely. And you know what? You're right. It's good to just talk about these issues. And, you know, not many people have someone they can speak to openly and freely about these types of issues, right?
That is true.
So it's good to bounce ideas off of you, Uju, and to learn from
Same
all our guests. That's right. So,
and the things we'll be talking about this season too, I'm personally looking forward to it. I mean, some of them, I think they're going to be really controversial issues, but still, I am kind of revving. I'm revving and getting ready to get into these issues. Because last year, I think I and you, we had had several meetings and we talked about like the kind of things that I think we should talk more about or areas where perhaps we haven't discussed before, perhaps people are not even talking much about it, but it doesn't mean that these are not heavy duty issues. Like the cases, you know, like when you have rape cases and how rape cases have been brought into this international struggle about abortion and the defense of life, how the pro-abortion movement is using rape to try to advance the so-called abortion rights. I want us to get into it, Matt. I want us to discuss it and really delve into it deeply, especially as it pertains to the international, you know, the international pro-life movement or the international struggle or battle for the sanctity of human life. I want us to talk more about things that like fetal abnormalities and diagnoses, you know, prenatal testing and prenatal diagnoses when people go in and they tell you, oh, you have this child with trisomy 21 or you have this child with this disease or that disease, you know, very likely. What happens, Matt? You know, there are other issues, surrogacy, it's some of them are even issues that are not really brought up enough within the pro-life movement.
Yeah, that's right.
And sometimes I think it's not because the issues are not clear, but it's because many people within the movement are still a bit confused as to where they should stand on these issues. Some of them are personally affected by some of these issues, you know, in cases of infertility and such. So issues like surrogacy, I want us to get into it. Demographic winter. I want us to talk about the American politics, Matt. I'm dreading it.
Oh, that's right.
It's coming.
It's coming. It's coming, coming this
like
year.
A freight train. I don't think we're going to be able to avoid it, Matt. I'm not looking forward to that. But the election is coming. It's this year. It's this year. The American politics, of course, we know it's always a very clear, very severe battlefront for, you know, for abortion-related issues or even issues that, you know, like the kind of issues that we talk about, culture issues, ideology type things. So
that's right.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. We will be affected by the American politics. So we're going to be getting into that, Matt, and hopefully we should be getting guests on some of these issues and talking about it.
That's right. And you know, the whole world watches. They're all watching what's happening in the States. And
for sure.
It's going to be a big election year, a big year for everyone, especially those within the pro-life movement. Mm-hmm. And you know, you also mentioned the demographic winter. There's like fertility, like just the fertility rates around the world are just plummeting. I don't know if you saw this latest study that came out in Canada. I believe it's at 1.3%, which is the lowest Canada has ever been. Can you believe that?
Well, most countries are now recording the lowest birth rates. I mean, from year to year, in the last, saying that even in the last 5 or 6 years, every time a new study comes out, it's never really, oh, birth rate has gone up. It's always the other way around, especially in these Western countries. So demographic winter, I think, is one area that I think we should really treat properly. And, you know, and some of these issues, as I said, Matt, we will be finding the guests. We will be looking for guests, finding guests, the best possible guests that we can find to come on the show and share with people, you know, how they are working on these issues, what they are doing, the new frontiers, the new challenges, where the world is at, what we could be facing in the near future. But also, amongst all these things that we'll be discussing, Matt, what I think that will be really there, you know, recurring all the time will be our ability to review and discuss the relevant issues coming up in the news on social media. There's always things on life. There's always things on ideology, things on culture. I mean, talking about that, even just getting on social media this week, I haven't done any tweeting, in fact, this year at all. But that doesn't mean that I haven't been on social media. Matt, I think you've given me some disease. I think my social media is now going to be looking very much like us, and I was laughing at you a while back.
welcome to the world of just following people watching, but not really doing anything.
Yeah, just watching. You know, this year I haven't felt like honestly, I don't know what it is that has happened to me this year, but it might also be like other things happening in my life with my work, you know, and the extra studies I'm having to do, that's, you know, on my own personal level. But somehow I've just been watching discussions happen on social media, and a couple of things I've just picked up that were posted by your own organization, Matt, Campaign Life Coalition, on social media in the last couple of days. And I said to myself, when we're recording this podcast, I would want you to get into it. Tell me exactly, or tell us, what exactly is it that we're hearing about this abortion center that closed in Canada? That's good news, actually. If some of the things I've seen posted on social media by your organization this week have been nothing but victories, massive victories.
We've had, praise be to God. We've had, if you're living in Canada and you're listening from Canada, then you may be, and you kind of get our newsletters and our e-blasts and whatnot, then you may be familiar with this. But for those who are outside of Canada, like, this is pretty huge for us. We had three very big victories on the life and family front in just the past, within a 7 day.
Amazing.
7 days. And they're all, they dealt with abortion, euthanasia, and family issues. So you mentioned this abortion facility that closed down. In New Brunswick, there was an abortion facility, a private abortuary, which was actually formerly the Morgenthaler Clinic. You know, and the infamous abortionist, Henry Morgenthaler. So we've been on this specific abortion facility for many years now. We've been petitioning the government. We've had a lot of grassroots efforts to try to, kind of, you know, encourage the current premier there to not cave to the pressures of the abortion lobby, because they've been kind of lobbying the government to ensure that this particular freestanding clinic gets government funding. And the premier said, no, ain't happening, right? Okay, which is huge. It's huge. Wow. And we're not, you know, this guy isn't some pro-life stalwart politician, but yes. on this issue, he's been very good. And he said, no, we're not going to do that. And
we're
what ends up happening,
abortions. We're
that's right.
pay for abortions. That's great.
And what ends up happening with most abortion businesses, without any kind of government handouts, they end up closing because that's, they depend on government money.
They depend on it. I mean,
yeah.
Wow.
So they announced just at the end of January that they will no longer be committing abortions. They will no longer be killing babies. And the crazy thing here is, Uju, so yes, we've been kind of doing a lot of activism on the political front, getting people
yes.
involved and kind of, you know, contacting their elected officials. But more importantly, just this past fall, one of her former interns, summer interns, she actually started up a 40 Days for Life campaign at that specific location.
Oh my goodness.
Isn't that beautiful? So it
oh,
used,
that's amazing.
They used to do 40 Days vigils there. There was a bit of like a break for a few years. So she kind of restarted them up. And lo and behold, within a few months, the place closes down, which I think is a huge testament to the power of prayer and fasting.
Yes.
And
Yes.
And we always say this, we could do
and
as
presence.
We could vote the right way. We can get involved
Yeah.
politically. And all these things are great. And we should be doing this. But
yes.
without prayer, at the foundation of all of this,
yes.
then we're not going to get anywhere. And I feel like this was the perfect balance of advocacy, grassroots efforts,
yes,
combined with prayer and fasting.
Yes.
And then this is what happens. So praise be to God for that, which is huge.
Oh, thank
the
God.
first abortion facility that closed its doors, that's closing its doors in Canada, probably in the last, I don't know, 15, 20 years. So amazing
well,
news.
This is great. I know that they, like, you know, some of our American listeners will may take this for granted, because in the US, we do hear about abortion facilities that kind of run out of money. And it's always, as you said, Matt, when they're no longer getting the freebies, the free money, the, you know, the easy access to people. Once you remove one element, you know, some of them is like, you tell them they need parental consent, they have to close. You tell them they need admission rights to hospitals, proper hospitals and ambulatory care, then they close their doors. You know, you find out, it's once you introduce one common sense thing, you find out that the abortion, there any, you know, any part of the abortion movement starts to shake and starts to crumble. So it's always when you introduce something good, and these are the things that we say within the pro-life movement, we're encouraging our politicians, okay, even if you feel you don't have the courage or the well without or even the political will to come out and quote unquote end abortion as we are praying for, just do one of these five or six things. Okay, can we ask for more strict rules on parental rights and you know and parental knowledge of the fact that they're taking kids to go and abort their babies? Can we, you know, ask for stricter rules on getting people who are trying to, human traffickers and all these people who are exploiting young children who come into abortion facilities? And can we set the actual facilities or infrastructure in place so that there is more accountability, more traceability? Can we have ambulatory care within these places and admission rights to hospitals and proper medical care? Once you do one of these things, even as a politician, and you insist on it, or can we defund them? That's, I mean, simple
money.
Thing to
yeah.
do.
Go after the money. That's
you
it.
You would have already done so much. Then leave the rest to we, the pro-lifers. We will pray. We will make the sacrifice. We'll fast. We'll do whatever that has to, you know, that needs to be done. We will provide alternatives for women.
Exactly. Exactly. We're there with open arms.
We'll take the rest.
Waiting,
just
waiting to help.
Do what needs doing. So I'm glad to hear this. The Americans might take it for granted. You know, we hear about abortion clinics closing. But in Canada, I personally haven't heard about it. That's why immediately I saw CLC posting it. I thought, oh my goodness, this
yeah,
is
it's we actually big. We actually celebrated in the office, in our headquarters office. We bought a birthday cake and because we wanted to
great.
Celebrate all the
birth.
Future all the future birthdays of babies
that will
happen because of this
wow.
place shutting down. And
true.
And you know, and again, it's if you follow the money, you just, you know, kudos to the premier who just said,
Yes.
no, I'm not going to cave
I'm
to
not
the
doing
abortion
this.
lobby. Even Justin Trudeau threatened him a few months ago with, like, make sure you fund this private abortuary. And he said, no, I'm not doing it. And, you know, the truth is, in this particular province of New Brunswick, which is on the Atlantic Ocean on the East Coast, there are still three hospitals that continue to kill babies, okay, in the province. So there's still, it's not like a free, you know, anti-abortion, free safe space. I mean, it's there's still killing happening on the province.
Of course.
However, we have one less place to worry
one
about
less.
now, which is the first step. And now let's get going and let's try to end
this
the
is
killing
so
completely.
Deep-rooted, Matt. I think that we have to take it one at a time, you know, one facility at a time, one frontier at a time. You see, so I'm happy to hear this. So congratulations to the Canadians. Congratulations. Well done, you guys. Keep praying. Keep doing those 40 Days for Life campaigns. Keep doing the sacrifice. Keep being present outside those abortion clinics. That's why they don't want us there. They don't want us together. They don't want us to pray. They're having all these bubbles and they're introducing all kinds of things. Because when pro-life people mean it, humble themselves, pray, fast, show themselves, be present and witness outside abortion facilities, things happen.
Things
I
happen.
Believe that God would do things.
And again, mixed with the right amount of kind of social outcry and people speaking to their politicians and kind of what, you know, if they're bad guys, then you challenge them. If they're good guys, then you encourage them to do the right thing.
True.
And because these politicians, I once heard this, a former liberal member of parliament once told me that, you know, pro-lifers were really good at getting people elected, okay? Getting good, solid pro-lifers elected. And as soon as they get elected, we kind of step back and now focus on the other election races. Meanwhile, these individuals now find themselves completely alone. And he told me, like, as soon as you elect someone, stay with that person, keep encouraging them, surround them with the right staff, and make sure that, because it's a very lonely place. So
it is.
Anyhow, it's great news. And if it can happen
Wow.
in a place like Canada, it can happen everywhere, you know?
That's right.
You know,
Trudeau's Canada.
In the UK, Trudeau's Canada. In
Probably
the UK,
there was that pro-abortion place in the world.
That's right.
One of
in the UK,
most.
Uju, one of your close friends, you know, she was arrested for praying.
That
just
is
for
true.
Praying outside of an abortion
That is
facility.
True. That's
So
Isabel. Yeah.
In Canada, we've had similar situations with a priest getting arrested for holding a sign against, you know, a sign promoting free speech.
Yeah.
And we have bubble zones. It's so bad here. And yet,
it is.
through God's mercy, we did it. One place is shutting down.
One less place, death chamber. Now, on to the next great news out of Canada. I saw this other one about euthanasia. And talking about euthanasia, we will be, hopefully, sometime within this season two of Focused on Life podcast, we're hoping to go into this one area, euthanasia, that I don't think that we know enough about. Many of us have not been able or privileged to work at this particular frontier. So I can't tell you much of what happens other than what we read on social media, what we read in the news, what we see happening in different countries where they have euthanasia or assisted death
suicide,
or assisted dying. You know, however, in Canada, they call it MAID, isn't it? Medically assisted assistance in dying. So they have different names they call it, but it's the one thing. It's all killing the elderly as we go from killing those in the womb to killing those who are towards the end of their life. But you know, the current culture just wouldn't want to wait for people to die in real dignity, but instead anyway. So it's euthanasia, and I saw something about the fact that your government, the Canadian government, once again wanting to have a huge expansion of euthanasia or assisted
suicide.
Assisted suicide, medical assistance in dying. I wanted to call it like the actual name. So they were trying to expand it to people who have mental health issues already. We've seen all these issues coming up in Canada where people are saying, oh, you know, I had this problem and I went to get some help from government, and they were telling me if you wanted MAID, which is assisted suicide, we will give it to you. You know, that's always faster. So it seemed that your government was trying to expand it, and then something happened, something miraculous happened. So tell me about that.
Yeah, well, you know, it's also, you know, just to go back to what you said about, you know, euthanasia for the elderly and those people at the kind of the end of their life. You know, that's usually, for the most part, that's what people think of when you think of euthanasia. Oh, it's, you know, it's killing the elderly, the sick. But what Canada has proven, because of how radically progressive this Trudeau government has been in regards to this issue in the culture of death, it's not just about the elderly anymore. It's about anyone who's sick, anyone who is suffering so much that they just want to end their life. It's now they're trying to expand it to those with mental illness. So people who are depressed, they've talked about expanding it to children, to minors. So this is the slippery slope of the euthanasia regime. And we're seeing this all across the world. You know, when you think of euthanasia, you think of the Netherlands, you think of Belgium, right?
Oh, yes.
But Canada, ever since it was legalized a few years ago, we've completely like
you've gone on steroids with
Our numbers are just way more drastic.
Yes, I've seen that. Yeah, I had seen that as well. Each year when the numbers are counted, guess what? Right. They're always on the up and up. It's never really going down. It's increasing, you know, twofold, threefold, tenfold. We're seeing some incredible statistics on this. And it's scary, Matt, when you say, oh, it's not really end of life. Because even me, imagine that I've been in the pro-life movement all these years. And even myself, when I think of euthanasia, my mind, exactly as you said, always goes to, you know, that promotion they gave to euthanasia 10, 15, 20 years ago when they were introducing it in all these places like Belgium and Netherlands and all that, where it's like, imagine the elderly, they're almost dying anyway. It's terminally ill, they're almost dying anyway. So let's end it. Let's end, quote unquote, the suffering. But my mind is not really going to the fact that somebody could be depressed. Really, really. Somebody could be depressed and then you end up
Someone could simply just be alone. they might be alone. They don't have anyone that they don't. They've just
and they get the approval.
They feel like they're alone. They feel like, you know, they feel unloved, unworthy.
Yes.
And you can have, and you've had all these, you know, disability activists speak out against this. Yes. It's like, how dare you assume that just because of my inability to do something, or maybe because I'm living with some sort of illness or disease, that I'm not worthy of life? Like it's so. So what ended up happening is the government was planning to expand this whole euthanasia assisted suicide agenda to and to those with mental illness. But given how unpopular it has become in Canada, they ended up backtracking because, you know, in Canada, we may also be having an election year. You know, it's not as clear cut as the one in the States, but it might happen this year, might happen next year, depending on when the NDP party kind of breaks away from the coalition they formed with the Trudeau Liberals.
Trudeau government, yeah.
But nonetheless, they realize how unpopular it is. So they put in the legislation as soon as they came back from the Christmas break to kind of put a pause on this next stage. Okay, that's how they're framing it. We're just pausing it.
We'll circle back. We'll circle back to this. That's the liberal slang, isn't it? We'll circle back to the issue. But we always know when they hit a wall. And they know when they've hit a wall. But
oh, yeah. And it's again, if it's an election year, it's unpopular. And they know that they cannot win on this issue with Canadians. Yeah. So they put a pause on this, which, again, it's a huge victory because in a few weeks when it was supposed to be officially kind of expanded to those with mental illness, that's not going to happen anymore. At least on paper, it's not going to happen anymore.
God.
So how many, like, hundreds or even thousands of lives will be spared because instead of assisted suicide, they might be offered, you know, hope and assistance and service and love. And like, maybe they might be offered a community of support, some counseling, some real counseling. Right. Yes. So that's just huge news. I don't think it's anything. I mean, the Conservatives did introduce a bill a motion to ensure that it never gets expanded. Of course, given our political climate, it didn't pass because the Liberals and the NDP voted against it.
However,
that did build enough momentum. So it's kudos for that one Conservative MP who introduced it because people started talking about it.
We had
a lot of people contact their MP saying how this is such a horrible thing. So thankfully, the Trudeau Liberals listened to the Canadian people.
Yes.
And maybe they didn't listen. They just were afraid of the election outcome.
Oh, of course they are.
But nonetheless, it's been put on hold indefinitely for the time being. And that means lives will be saved. So praise be to God for that.
Oh, thank God. Matt, something you said that I just want to kind of touch on, where it's like, okay, a conservative politician had put some objection to it by raising an opposing bill or something to make people talk about it, even though he lost that at that point. And then people started talking about it. One thing I found over the years with how the culture of death works, the people who are promoting all these things like abortion, euthanasia, you know, all these things that they are promoting within the culture of death. The one thing I've noticed by working closely with these people and standing close enough to observe them is that that side of the culture of death, they love things to pass in secret. And we know that from the United Nations.
Yep.
When they're raising their worst issues, you know, when they're about to do their most dirty jobs, they want it to be middle of the night. You know that when they're doing the resolutions at the United Nations, when they don't want us to talk about it, when they bring in an evil bill, you know,
that's
the
right.
Worst of it, they don't want anybody to read it. They don't want anybody to know the contents of it. So I'd say this quite loosely, because some people tell me, oh, some liberals are against euthanasia, they're against abortion. But let me just put it this way. In Western politics, when you say a proper socially liberal politician, when you see them in their element, in action, they want to have everything they're doing quietly, because it works in their favor that people should not unpack whatever it is that
That's
they're
right.
trying to introduce.
And you
be
know,
it bubble zone, whatever it is, they don't want us to know the contents of what it is, the resolution that they're going to pass, the bill they're going to bring forward, if they're talking about children, you know, the sex changes, all of that. So they want it to be quietly done. So perhaps one more way that our people can fight is really to keep talking, to keep raising awareness, to don't even think that they outnumber you, so you're going home quietly. No, there are so many more people at home quiet who may not be activists like we are, and they're not out there holding placards, but all they need is a proper explanation as to what
That's
this
right.
brand new thing is.
That's
a
right.
real explanation in truth of what this bill means. If you bring in this euthanasia, see what it means for the lonely, see what it means for the depressed, for minors, you know, just give examples of where these things could actually, you know, affect people, real people's lives, day-to-day lives. So
that's right.
Perhaps we'll have more support.
That's right. And you know what? I would actually add a second layer to your argument, where
yes,
they do things in secret, kind of like privately with no one knowing what's happening.
Uh-huh.
And then when they can't pull that off, they
yeah,
tend to then play around with language. So then they frame
deny
these evil things as a positive thing, right?
That's right.
So
That's
even
right.
Like with euthanasia and assisted suicide, like you can't even say assisted suicide anymore, because that has such a negative connotation. So they
Yes.
came up with, you know, medical assistance in
Assistance in
dying. Look at
dying.
this
True.
colorful language. I'm here to help you. You know, I'm here to help
Yeah.
you die
Yeah.
a
Yeah.
peaceful. You know, so you're a bank. Like, yeah, you're right on the money with that. And
Yeah.
it's true. And I think those of us, the rest of us, so the non culture of death activists,
Yeah, the normal people,
the normal folks, we need to unpack what the other side is doing through their legislation and their bills and stuff. We have to unpack it. And when we unpack it, we start seeing exactly what's at play here.
Yeah.
And then we talk about it, we share it with our family and friends, and then we have a chance at stopping this and mitigating the kind of damage that's taking place.
Absolutely, Matt. Absolutely. It's just, it's talk about it, let people know. Listen to our podcast.
Yeah, listen to Focus on Life podcast. Exactly.
Live podcast, you know, or any other podcast, when people are really talking about issues that are not normally discussed out there. Obviously, there are people who are talking about pro-life things. There are people talking about conservative things. But perhaps some of these issues are not really being dealt with quite judiciously, you know, in a thorough manner, in such a way that, okay, someone will come out of it and say, okay, I'm gaining extra perspective. I'm going to go back. I'm going to find out more about this. Go and read it yourself. If it's a bill, go and find about it yourself. But know the truth and know what every single one of those phrases or resolutions or paragraphs, you know, problematic paragraph, what it means and the implication to just ordinary day-to-day people. Now, another good news. Oh, perhaps, Matt, what was on my mind, I should say, is You guys have had your cake session where you ate some cake and for the babies who are going to be born. Now, perhaps you should also kind of have some kind of celebration about the people who perhaps, you know, they might be saved in this period when Trudeau has not been able to finish off this cycle of death that they were trying to impose on the Canadian people. So you guys, I think it's really worth celebrating and worth mentioning that this is a victory, even if they're saying they will go back to it. But at this time, people will be spared. And in
That's
this
right.
period of time, months
right.
away, if it's a year or whatever, there are people who otherwise would have been in the, you know, in the very forefront of this, you know, of this particular attack on human life, that who would otherwise be spared. So
exactly,
congratulations.
Exactly. That's right. And then,
well
and then
done.
Uju, there is a third item, a third
oh, wow.
item, because I there's
Please
three things.
Share.
There's three things which I we you did mention. Oh, there's all these things that all these successes that we've been experiencing in Canada, which again, we're going into this because this doesn't happen that often here in
That's
Canada.
Right.
So we have to talk about this.
Yeah.
So Uju, thank
yeah.
you for giving me the chance to talk more about what's happening
for
in Canada.
sure.
But as you all know, the whole gender ideology thing has taken over our schools.
Oh, yes.
Okay. And we did an episode on this. Was it episode 3 or 4?
Well,
four?
it
I'm
was,
not
yeah,
sure.
on comprehensive
Sexuality
sexual education,
education.
which kind of deals on it,
The parental
parental
rights
rights.
and what's being taught in schools, in elementary schools. So there's been a big push for parental rights in Canada and really around the world. You see it everywhere. And what ended up happening in Alberta, which is another province in Canada, the premier there, they introduced a parental rights bill. And in this bill, it's an amazing first step towards ending this whole madness that's happening with the indoctrination of children in schools on gender ideology. And what they did is they said that any minors are no longer, it's illegal to put minors on all these kind of like medical, chemical, you know,
castration,
the hormone blocker,
the hormone
puberty
blockers,
all this stuff that's happening, that is just irreversible. It's dangerous and it's deadly to young children. Which again, as soon as they, and I mean, I saw a poll just the other day that I think 74% of Canadians agree with this kind of common sense policy. Okay.
Yeah.
So an overwhelming majority of Canadians agree with this. And then there was a few other things that unfortunately weren't perfect, because she was still the premier in this bill. They're still, you know, kind of acknowledging that maybe with parental notification, it's okay. So if the parents are okay with it, and, you know, it's great that now parental notification is required for kids who are 16 and 17. But at the same time, there's a lot of parents out there who are also completely, you know, swept
crazy.
Up by this. They're swept up by this whole movement. And so that's unfortunate. At the same time, it is an amazing first step. Because
it
kind of really, like Jeff Gunnarsson, the president of Campaign Life, he mentioned just in the media the other day how this kind of put, it's like a huge obstacle in the gender ideology movement. And it's going to set them back. And I feel like by doing this, Canadians are now waking up. There was this premier who had, you know, the spine to do this. And Uju, I don't know if you saw the meltdowns that have been taking place within the Trudeau federal liberals and all these woke politicians who have been just having extreme meltdowns about this, calling this the most anti-LGBTQ, you know, policy ever in Canada. And you have these activists coming out saying that, you know, they're even
people are going to die.
People are going to die. One woman or man, I don't know what he or she was, because first of all, they don't identify as anything.
Of course,
and it was hard
yeah,
to tell
yeah,
just looking at them.
Binary.
But this one person said that this is like, it's like the beginning of a genocide against trans youth.
Grief.
And I thought to myself, well,
for
first
parents
of all,
to take a decision on their own children.
Well, first of all, what is a trans youth? I mean, God created male and female.
Oh,
right?
Good grief.
And it's, you cannot, biologically, you cannot change someone's sex, okay?
Oh,
but
for
the
sure.
truth is, are there, there's an infinite amount of personalities, and there's an infinite amount of, every human being is unique. So they will have, they will think, you know, they'll think different things about who they are and what they believe in. And that's what growing up as a kid is all about.
Oh,
right?
yes.
You give them the space to kind of figure out who they are, right? But to just take that kind of phase in a child's life and then kind of push them towards like the establishment, you know? Oh, well, you know, we're going to, oh, I think like you have gender issues. So therefore now you should go see a doctor. Let's put you on puberty blockers. Let's start
without parental notification.
It's
Matt, what a nightmare.
It's absolutely horrific. So she put a bit of a stop to this, which is just wonderful. And again, a huge good news story in Alberta, in Canada. And so three massive victories for the pro-life and pro-family movements in Canada.
Well, that's excellent, Matt. A wonderful first step. And perhaps it will encourage other premiers to do the same or do likewise or see that, you know, the common sense in at least the good part of this particular bill or this particular, resolution that this premier has now put forward, what is now in practice. So the fact that I find this whole, gender ideology a bit scary because obviously I am not a parent, but for those people who are parents, like you, Matt, like my sibling, like many of my friends, imagine that you have this small child, impressionable child, and one day your child goes to school. I think the nightmare is that child will come back and then be somebody else or be something else or, you know, or try to tell you, well, you don't have a son anymore. You now have a daughter. Or start wearing a dress without your permission, without your consent, without even sometimes your knowledge. Sometimes these kids go to school, they have everything in their bags. And then when they get to school, they're quote unquote teachers, these activist teachers that they have will then help them quote unquote actualize who they really are. I mean, when you're watching some of the documentaries and some of the materials out there, even some of them are like even short reels when you go on social media, on TikTok, on IG and all of that, you're seeing that these things are happening in people's day-to-day lives. They're happening to normal people. They're happening to people who are churchgoers. You know, it doesn't matter who you are as a parent. Your child, as long as your child is going to school, and that is majority of the children in this world, right? The majority, the majority of children who are still minors will at some point be under the care of a teacher. Or an adult who is supposed to be teaching them or who is supposed to be instructing them or who is supposed to care for them within these normal work hours. And that's like a lot of hours in the day. So the fact that you're a parent and your child is under the care of another adult and that adult is now given the rights over your child to make of your child whatever it is that they want or they agree with. I think that's a scary concept. That's a scary thought. But that is a day-to-day reality of so many regular good people, you know, and we've seen it sweep through this Western world like a madness. So to even see one politician, a woman for that matter, I must mention, to see one politician taking a step, a courageous step like this, that is making the opposition go crazy, you would know it's a huge point of courage. I'm happy to see that. I'm always happy to see whenever
it's and honestly, she has a lot of support throughout the country, because again, it's a parental nonsense. Rights issue. It's about parents. Let kids be kids. Leave the kids alone. Let them, you know, let them be children. Let them be children. And you know, with social media and like just the internet, like nowadays, like how many stories are we hearing about all these people who kind of like detransition? So they were put on all these chemicals, all these drugs. Yeah. All these like life altering drugs and medical procedures that made them, you know, infertile, that just completely
destroyed
their bodies.
This is and Frankenstein. Now,
that's
you know,
right.
This is
that's
Frankenstein
right.
experimentation.
And you have these 20-year-olds saying, this is who I am now. And like, they're so angry at the people who kind of led them in that direction.
Oh, yeah.
Meanwhile, all they really needed was someone to just affirm them for who they are as human beings. You know, as like, you have value, we love you, you have dignity.
You have dignity,
and you know, let's work together on this.
Oh,
but now man. They have, you know, but you know, some of these folks, I think these people who went through that whole, they were the victims of this ideology, and now they're speaking out against it. I think these are the real champions, and I think these are the people, their stories are going to do a lot of good I think, in this whole conversation.
Whoa, Matt, honestly, I don't know what it is that has passed through Canada, but I'm seeing some really good things coming out of there. But having said that, on social media the other day, you brought to my attention a post that actually got me really, really crazy, really mad, upset. Really, what is it about this Secretary for International Development in Canada, again Canadian, but this actually has to do with Africa as much as Canada. So she made a post, Matt, and I don't know if you have that post nearby, but she's talking about how glad she is, like they just went to Congo. Congo, by the way, just for some background, is this Africa is an African country, one of the larger African countries, Central African region. You can see it on the map where it is, just to know exactly the location of it. It's French speaking, some part of it English speaking. So Congo, Kinshasa, Congo, Brazzaville. But if you have even any knowledge about what has been happening on the African continent in the last decade, Congo, I think, is one of the most, if not the most, war-torn countries in on the African continent in the last couple of years. Congo has had its share of wars, killings, child exploitation. That's where even up to now we're finding issue problematic, really, really serious social problematic issues like child soldiers, villages where people can't even get into. They're having severe problems of just villages, people having to leave their villages, and they are displaced. They're calling them the internally displaced, and they're having to move to another part of the country, or they're having to move to neighboring countries. And I tell you, the Congolese are suffering in so many ways. It is an embattled country. Even when the so-called peace happens, or when you think, oh, it's the war is not longer happening in this region, the people are still suffering severely. They have also been very much affected by a lot of the, let's say, a lot of the demands that have come from the West for raw materials, because Congo is another thing about Congo is that they're really highly blessed by minerals, raw materials, minerals. They are sitting on copper. I think they're in the world. I think they're one of the highest producers of raw copper. They have things like cobalt. They have materials that they use in transistors and capacitors. And so things like the batteries we use in our phones, the capacitive energies that we use in our mobile phones, so many of the things that we are now using, the electric cars, some of those materials are kind of, if you trace it back, a lot of them are coming from the Congo region. And what people, some of the activists in Congo, the issues they're raising is that because of this kind of greed and demand coming from the insatiable West, and the companies, the corporate companies coming from the West, is that it has now created this like black market. It's untenable, but the depth to which the black markets have sunk their roots into these countries. And so in local communities, people are suffering in Congo. Now, having said that, having said this is the background of Congo, and I'm saying this as an African who, even knowing full well that for me to even go to Congo is something that you really have to check where you're going. It's not just like I can walk into Kenya, I can walk into Uganda. No, I can't just travel to Congo without doing my background to know where I'm landing, where I'm going, where I'm staying. Largely is not a safe country at this point in time. But then your Secretary for International Development, the Canadian Secretary for International Development, is putting a post about these sufferings happening. Not about the women who are being internally displaced with their children. Not even about the incredible. Oh, one thing I didn't mention is that there have also been these like epidemic levels of rape. So there are all these women who have had, just go to the internet, find out about Congo. I'm just telling you. Just I mean it, I can't even begin to enumerate all the problems that they've had. But one of the issues is the fact that the women, there have been these epidemics of rape and abuse of women and violence against women in many parts. And that's not a surprise with all these problems that I've mentioned happening in the background. Women are the weaker ones, the ones that need more protection. Of course, they are the ones that are suffering the most in some of these communities with the children. So having said all this, Matt, your Secretary for International Development, who is seeing all of this happening, the black markets, the lack, the problems, the instabilities happening in communities in Congo. And she put up a post, not about any of these, but about the project. You know, I want you to read part of the post about the project that is happening. So please read it.
Yeah, she's posting, almost like boasting about how the Canadian government, feminist initiative, feminist international policy. Assistance policy, how the wonderful work that it's, that the money, that where the money is going, and the wonderful partnership that they're working on with IPAS, which Uju, you know, when you think of IPAS,
who knows
like
IPAS, that is abortion organization.
That is their all, like their main product is abortion. Yeah,
that is
okay.
True.
That's their yes. Anyways, and they're talking about the strong and sustainable pathways to safe abortion care in the Congo and working with local health authorities and. And it's just so, you know, and they even say that it's a country with some of the highest maternal mortality rates in the world. They even mention that. And here their solution is they're not actually addressing maternal mortality.
No.
They're adding to it. They are adding to it. And they're actually killing babies in the process by promoting, not only are they promoting IPAS, this pro-abortion organization, but they're like, you know, it's like this, and then you have these pictures of this, you know, this one MP and some of her staff, and they're sitting around this table with all these local leaders, and it's like, and I just thought, you know, I don't want to make this about race, and you know me, like the whole race culture wars, it's like I don't care about any of that, but like here you have this white woman who's like kind of like checking in on these Africans to see like. To make sure that they're doing a good job.
That they're on the project with
that they're on the project that they're
quote unquote safe abortion.
That's right. That, you know, we're just here to check in on you to make sure that you're doing a good job killing babies and that you're doing a good job promoting abortion. You know, it was just this. It just
but forget about your child soldiers in the villages. Like, we don't care about the girls who are being raped or the people who are being, you know, kind of, you know, kids who are being trafficked and kidnapped and being put into these militia groups in remote places in these countries. Ridiculous.
And you know what? They will say, oh, we care about them. Of course, we have, you know, we're doing this and this. Okay. If that's what you're saying.
Not, you're not talking about it.
You're not talking about it. And more importantly, I just decided to kind of, I did some of my own research and I went on the government website that you can kind of search all the projects and the money and the grants.
Yeah.
And did you know, Uju, that since 2019, okay, so less than 5 years, our Trudeau government has funneled almost $47 million to IPAS. Five IPAS projects.
Wow.
$47 million. And they all deal with abortion. And for the most part, they're all located in the African continent.
Of course.
And
this
so
is he, it.
This is it. This is ideological colonization at its finest. This is the evidence that you need. You have these Western donors, these Western ideologues coming into these countries and
They're coming to unstable countries. Matt, it's not like we're hanging about, you know, sewing nice African clothes, doing nice art, you know, that romanticized vision of Africa. Congo is, you know, is not to be romanticized. This is a country that has suffered so much. This is a country that has suffered so much already. And the fact that what the Canadian government is proud of or what they are really banging on and the issue they've decided to pick on is something that has to do with IPAS, the International Abortion Inc. It's a shame, I think. And this is, as you said, neocolonialism at its finest. But anyway, we'll just leave it there, Matt. Honestly, I'm looking forward to this season too. There's too much, if nothing, there's too much to talk about. But Matt, you have just recently come back from a business trip. Tell me about it.
It's not so much a business trip as more of like a Yeah, well, it was a mission trip because
trip. You went to New York
I
for
went to New
something like
York
the United Nations.
to the UN because there was a commission on for social development that just wrapped up. And it also happens to be that at this particular commission, they're commemorating the 30th, I guess, anniversary of the International Year of the Family. Okay,
Yes.
so
Wow.
we together with a few other NGOs, we put on a side event with, or rather, some pro-family member states put on a side event, and they invited some of the NGOs to take part in this event. And I
at
was
the
able
United
at the
Nations,
United
yeah.
Nations and commemorating the Year of the Family, which again is like a great opportunity for us to speak about the family, right?
Sure.
Especially at this commission where they're trying to kind of push policies and resolutions that really go against that kind of cell, that family unit. And in preparing for my statement, I actually went back to the source. So I went back to John Paul II's letter to families from 1994 on that original year of the family. Okay. And Uju, I just want to read this one thing that I found in the statement that John Paul
Please do,
II
because
wrote.
I haven't read the letter, so I want to know.
So I want to just read this to you, and I want to get your first reaction from this because, anyways, I'm going to read this. And I'm going to ask you what
Read
you think of
it.
this.
Go ahead.
So Saint John Paul II writes in this statement from 1994. Okay, and I'm quoting here. Unfortunately, various programs backed by very powerful resources nowadays seem to aim at the breakdown of the family. At times, it appears that concerted efforts are being made to present as normal and attractive, and even to glamorize situations which are in fact irregular. Indeed, they contradict the truth and love which should inspire and guide relationships between men and women, thus causing tensions and divisions in families with grave consequences for children. The moral conscience becomes darkened. What is true, good, and beautiful is deformed, and freedom is replaced by what is actually enslavement. End quote.
And this was from 1994.
1994, would you?
It was from 30 years ago this year. Honestly, this is prophecy.
It's prophecy.
This is prophecy. It's talking about enslavement. This is prophecy. Like, wow, Matt, thanks for sharing this with me. Now, what I'm going to do is I have to read the entire letter. So favor, Matt, we need to put this in the show notes. We need to put a link to this letter in the show notes, because even I need to read the entire letter to know exactly, to get the full thing.
I'll include it in the letter,
and
encourage.
Thanks for taking this to the UN. Thanks for reading this at the event, because
this
is it.
But it's crazy. He's not only talking about various programs backed by powerful resources, which is really what you've been exposing for the last 10 years about the Western donors,
but
the
that's
ideologues,
it.
And what they're doing is their aim is to break down the family, but also they're framing these evil things as beautiful, as normal, as attractive, right?
Oh, yes.
And the result of that is it's creating divisions within the family
Within the
unit.
family,
I mean,
between parents.
all
Exactly
this.
What we've just talked about, isn't it? The
It's just,
parents
it's
and
unreal,
children.
unreal. John Paul II said this 30 years ago.
1994.
And the question is, why didn't we not listen? Or maybe not enough of us were
listening. Not enough.
Not enough
Not
people were
enough.
listening.
And I think people would have thought, oh, this is a bit much, though.
It's a bit much,
surely
yeah.
It's not this bad. But fast forward to 2024, 30 years later, this is our reality. This is our day-to-day reality. And it's happening to people within the church, outside the church, wherever you are, you can be affected. Within your family, things can be broken. People can be enslaved because of what the ideologues are promoting, with the powerful governments behind them, with all the money, with all the funding. Oh my gosh, this just brings together the entire show. Everything we've talked about, from the defunding of the abortion clinic, the fact that it's big money, big governments, big supporters supporting the evil mechanism that keeps up to now, since 1994 and beyond, and still up to today. It is still going, and it's still going. But thank God we are here, and we do have things like this letter, this letter on the Year of the Family to sort of to hold on to, and to keep
That's
reminding
right.
ourselves Yes, the evil keeps going. You know, the evil keeps pushing. The formula is the same, but we also are here to witness
But you
against
know, and but also the
it,
truth
testify
never
against it.
changes. The truth
That's
never
right.
changes. So we
Yeah,
have to
and we're
keep
here.
repeating. We have to keep repeating the truth, whether it was written 30 years ago or whether it's something we're saying today. Keep repeating it. Keep talking about these
Keep talking
issues with your
about it.
family and friends. And most importantly, Uju, please, to all of you listening, keep listening to Focus on Life
That's
podcast.
it.
That is the most important thing you can do. No, but in all seriousness,
It can be a 2024 thing for you,
it could be a
honestly. Just
2024 thing, a New Year's
honestly.
resolution.
Yeah.
Listen to our
Download
podcast, download our podcast, share it.
podcast.
It's available on all the social platforms. And thank you for tuning in today, I guess. And
Absolutely.
Uju, we're wrapping up episode one of season two. We
Season
now have
two,
two seasons. It's official, two seasons.
it's official.
And if you have any questions, you can email us at focusonlifepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow Uju on X and at Ogunuju, even though she doesn't really tweet anymore because she's becoming more like me, who I just observe and watch what everyone's doing, but I don't actually
Change, that
contribute.
could
I'm
change,
not
but yeah, for
contributing.
now I haven't tweeted, but I'm on IG as well, so I'm thinking maybe on IG I have to try and do something for social media. But honestly, Matt, it's so much going on in my life at the moment, so for now I'm just watching. But yes, follow us, and then Campaign Life Coalition as well. They're always there, unlike
That's
us,
right.
Matt.
That's right. They are always there.
Campaign Life is there posting. You guys are actively doing stuff, so thank you, thank you. I'm grateful. Thank you for listening to us. And Matt, thank you for being here again this year, for showing up again in 2024 to continue this up a little project, the Focused on Life podcast. So everyone, let's just keep being very, very focused on life. Thank you.